You're listening to the Loyalty Minute, the show that helps you build better customer loyalty and more valuable user engagement with your host, Rob Gallo.
Welcome, loyal listeners, to another episode of the Loyalty Minute. I'm your host, Rob Gallo, and today I'm super eager and excited to chat with John Bertino. John is the owner and founder of the innovative marketing consultancy called The Agency Guide, or TAG, T-A-G. I'm going to let him explain that to you in much more detail because it is fascinating, but he tells the story way better than I do. So welcome to the show, John, and thanks for joining me.
Rob, thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
Okay, so before we hit the record button, we started talking about TAG and The Agency Guide. And like I said, the way you hit it to me, it was overwhelming. And I couldn't do it justice with just this verbiage that I have in front of me. So Let's spend another minute or two to go over what it is, how you got there, and a little bit more about yourself.
Sure. So the agency guide, or TAG, as you said, is indeed pretty unique. And so the business model requires a little context and explaining. So TAG is a collective of five digital and or brand marketing execs. There's five of us. And each one of us has at least a decade, if not a couple decades, of brand or digital marketing experience behind us. We meet and consult with brands pro bono, meaning for free, in an effort to advise on, look, if we were in your shoes, here's where we'd be putting marketing dollars and why. Here's what reasonable investments in those channels looks like and why. And here's what type of outcomes you should expect from those investments. And we do this objectively in an effort to kind of set expectations on what they're getting into and why they should get into it. And when we're aligned on these things, we look to matchmake them with one of the roughly 200 or so agencies or consultants we represent. So we're like a marketing agency matchmaker that provides a ton of value-added consulting along the way. And the one other thing I like to highlight is that, you know, 200 agencies may sound like quite a few, and it is, but it's a manageable number. We've been doing this for 8 years now, and we really find ourselves calling on these various 200 or so teams, pretty much all of them at least some point throughout the year. And we're real clear on their strengths, their weaknesses, their vertical expertise, their employee retention, their client retention, their budgets, their costs, so on and so forth, which really allows us to create these amazing matches between the brands, their specific needs, and then this pool of vetted agency partners we represent. And again, we do all that free of charge because we, of course, make all of our revenue through the agencies we represent.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's awesome. That's really, it's like matchmaking or dating, like a dating app for agencies.
More so than you probably would think.
I love the concept. I love the idea because, you know, again, I think about it marketing my standpoint. And I know we spoke before I hit the record button about two other businesses that I own and operate, and marketing. You know, a lot of companies, big companies actually, have multiple agencies. And I found this to be pretty interesting too. Some that are specific about just this vertical, or not only the vertical, but in these these multiple channels. And it's kind of an interesting dynamic. Now, 200, like you said, it sounds like a lot, but I think there's probably a couple of thousand in the US alone. So just 200 is not that many. So we're going to get deep into the weeds, but I like to start off the conversation with the first question that I ask most of my guests, and that is, what is John Bertino? What do you think? What does loyalty mean to you?
Customer loyalty or brand loyalty, right? So you had given me a heads up that you might start off with this. And so I put some real thought into it. And I think if you really distill it down to its least common denominator, what makes someone brand loyal, or the key characteristic that defines brand loyalty, I would say would be sticking with a brand or service provider despite deficiencies or inadequacies, or, you know, despite, you know, advertising from competitors that might even be touting something reasonably compelling or more compelling. It's sticking with that product or service provider despite the fact that you might be able to do better somewhere else and you don't care. To me, that's brand loyalty.
Okay, but then how did you get there in the first place? Because let's just say, for argument's sake, you think about Apple, right, as a brand that many people are loyal to, and they're evangelists and diehards, and they do things right. But if the brand doesn't do things right in the first place, you're not going to be there to allow them to make a mistake to then say, well, we'll overlook it because we love the brand. Yeah. So, you know, if you take it up one level, let's pick a brand that you're loyal to as a personal consumer in any vertical and why.
Yeah. So kind of a two-part question there. I think the first, it's important to recognize that it's been said, and I love this expression, that brand loyalty stems from either the head, the heart, or the hand. Have you ever heard this one?
No.
And what that's saying is that people are loyal to brands either because for practical reasons, that's the head, for emotional reasons, that's the heart, or kind of out of laziness, that's the hand, out of repetition. They've done it a million times, so they just keep doing it. And when you dissect that as a marketer, what immediately jumps out to me is that the strongest bond of those three, unquestionably in my mind, is the bond of the heart. So you can usually whittle connections that are based on rational thinking can be broken. Those connections, that loyalty based on repetition, are absolutely vulnerable. But it's really hard to take to get someone to think emotionally about your brand or product when they already have an emotional connection somewhere else. And so I think the key to developing brand loyalty is being able to make those emotional connections. So that was part one of your question. Mm-hmm. I think the second part was, so who might I be loyal to, or what's a good example, right? Yeah. So, you know, I've been asked this before where it comes up just in branding calls and conversations. And I love to use a little bit of a contrarian example in actually Starbucks. And it's contrarian because I don't like their coffee. I don't like their coffee at all. In fact, my friends will tell you, I've been known to say ashes to ashes, dust to dust. If it tastes like an ashtray, it must be Starbucks. That's a little brutal, right? Absolutely brutal. But the irony is I'm always at Starbucks. So why is that? It's because of the consistency of the experience that they offer. I know when I go to a Starbucks what I'm getting. And so perhaps I should clarify that the main reason I go isn't for the coffee. It's for the workspace, or as they call it, the third space. Their famous thing is, we want to be the third space. You've got your home, you've got your office, and then you've got us, the third space. Okay. And so I'm there all the time to work. I'm that geek on the laptop. Yes, that's me. But I know when I go there, unlike other coffee shops I might venture into, that there's always going to be tables, that the music won't be so obnoxious I can't get my work done, that I know roughly what my options are and I can jump in there and efficiently make an order and I'm at my table working, and a handful of other things that are predictable and consistent. And so what I kind of get and am buying from them, ironically, is security and predictability, and that has very real value. And so in a super ironic way, I'm loyal to Starbucks and I don't even like their coffee.
So again, I mean, it resonated when you said emotional, because every decision that's ever been made has been an emotional decision that's backed up or refuted, one or the other, by logic and reason, right? So it was a couple of good books that talk about this. Made to Stick's one of my favorite books of all time. But when you think about a brand, right, or an experience with that brand, in this case, Starbucks, that's not even their core functionality of what you're doing, but you found an ancillary sort of avenue to say, the reason that I'm going to be loyal to this particular business is not necessarily because of their, let's say it's McDonald's and their French fries, right? But it's their environment, right? So that's fascinating. I don't think I've ever heard that. And this is episode 100 and something. That's pretty good. So let's move towards the business side, right? So thinking about loyalty, brand loyalty, customer loyalty from a business standpoint in and of yourself. So let's say, you know, and I'm thinking about your business model and I'm saying, how is there repeat business in TAG?
Oh, for sure. I mean, when we place a brand with an agency and it's a slam dunk, which it's almost always a home run, but sometimes it's a grand slam, they're so happy that when other things come up that agency can't satisfy, they'll come back to us and you can be sure those are our favorite situations and the ones that make us the most proud of what we do.
Okay. So then for you as a business owner, how do you think about brand loyalty when it comes to your brand and obviously delivering the goods? But can you think of a scenario where someone's coming to you, like you're going to Starbucks, where they're coming to you for not necessarily the same thing that you think is, you know, on your masthead, of saying, hey, this is us, you know, this is our sign on the door, this is what we do, but they're coming back to you for other reasons. But either way, in that case, what is it that you do to get them to continue to come back?
So both with my business and just in business and branding in general, we often talk with the brands we're consulting with about making sure that your brand messaging, which I think is the key here, transcends features and benefits, and that you learn how to sell outcomes. Outcomes, not features and benefits. So, what's the famous expression? Stop trying to sell the drill, sell the hole in the wall instead.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a funny one, but it's a good one. Donald Miller, right? He's a story brand guy. He's very popular these days. If you're looking at the godfathers of branding, or maybe not so much the godfather, but the top 5-10 branding experts out there, Donald Miller's on that list. And what he popularized was this idea of, you know, well, a couple of different things, but one is focus on the outcome, right? So I guess in our case, to use ourselves as an example, yes, we help brands find agencies, and we do this very efficiently and effectively, but the outcome is the process of finding an agency isn't an arduous, draining one, where it's less arduous and less draining. There's more certainty you get by flowing through us versus just taking some referral from someone you casually asked, hey, what branding agency are you working with? What SEO agency are you working with? There's a safety and security, again, in talking to a team of vetted objective consultants, that would be us, who at no cost and all their expertise say, look, this is what we would be doing if we were you, and then matchmake you with the vetted team that we've, again, emphasis on the vetted part. So it's the safety, it's the security, it's the efficiency. These are the outcomes we want people to associate with what it is we do. And I think, you know, to go back to the Starbucks example, you know, the coffee is a cup of coffee, but the predictability of the experience is something that other local cafes can't necessarily sell you. So focus on the outcomes and not the features and benefits is the main thing that comes to mind when you ask that question.
Yeah. You know, I think that's probably, you know, what I was talking about Made to Stick, and the other one is called The E-Myth by Michael Gerber.
Yes.
What a great book. You know, he talks about the franchise prototype, and what Ray Kroc did at McDonald's was make it predictable. So people from an emotional standpoint are creatures of habit. They can't stand change. They want to know it's the same thing, even if there might be better options. So I think that's, you know, at the top of the show, we were talking about that people will still come to you before your competitor, even if your competitor is priced cheaper or offers a better product, because they're emotionally vested in you.
The emotion is absolutely the key. You need to find a way to have your brand connect with people at an emotional level. And it's not an easy thing to do. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of kind of dissecting of your messaging, your value proposition, and understanding that ownable space, as my business partner Steven often calls it, you know, that area where, you know, your value proposition and the experience people get when they interact with you is unique and separates you from the other options that are out there.
Yeah. Because there's always a better mousetrap somewhere, it seems like it.
That's right.
But, you know, Apple keeps its people, its consumers coming because they offer great products. But it's not only that, too. I think it's the service, honestly. You know, you think of a $1 trillion company and you can get somebody on the phone that understands what you're discussing with them and get you back the answers that resolve your issue. That to me is worth it right then and there. I do business with a company called BMob, right? So one of my companies has it's a platform that kind of manages all your campaigns in one location. So you're doing Google ads, you're doing Facebook ads, and you have specific links for each one. And it's a nice view that you can see. But I got an answer from them. And you know, they have a live chat. I got an answer from them that normally sometimes you deal with these big companies and you're going to get a generic canned answer. These people took the time to take screenshots of what I should be looking for, what I'm looking at, to just for an idea that I came up with to enhance the platform for the way we use it. And they were like, I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is great. And I'm only paying $49 a month for this service, which is relatively inexpensive. But, you know, going up and above and beyond, I think gives people that sense that you're actually listening rather than just a canned answer.
100%. The customer service is such a great way to leave customers with great emotional connections, or the opposite, right? Yep. Reason why you don't want to mess it up. There's a guy, Marty Neumeier's his name. Again, my colleague Steven loves Marty Neumeier. He runs an organization called Level C, which is one of the preeminent branding like training institutes out there. And he always says, a brand is a person's gut feeling about a product, service, organization. It's the feelings they have when they think of your brand name. And it's like, furthermore, branding isn't really, ironically, what you think it, your brand isn't what you think it is. It's what your customers think of when they hear your brand name. And I really thought that was a brilliant insight, you know, that the brands are really built by the individuals, and in many ways, not by the brand themselves. You can, it's kind of like you can lead the horse to water type thing, yep. But at the end of the day, their takeaway, their impression, that's really what your brand is.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. In fact, you know, I'm dating myself. Back in 1997, we launched an online casino, and it was called, it's still in business today. I sold
which
it
one?
In 2010. But we did a survey and we asked people, what's the most important factor you look for when choosing an online casino? And now at the time, there was probably only 6 or 10 online casinos in the world. And 85% of the respondents said that it was trust and security. So at the time, we had some other kind of lame logo. We went to a brand guy who works with big major companies, and we said, we need a brand that shows security and trust and security. So he came up with a logo that looked like a bank, and they still use it today. Omni Casino. It's under, you know, like it has a kind of like a two Doric columns on the side and the little triangular thing on the top that looks like a bank, like an old school bank. And we said on the site that it was the most trusted and secure site. Right. So we proclaimed that, we put our flag down. And again, we had no one else to contest this. And again, 25 years later, they're still operating under that same auspices. So, but people now believe it, you know, because we started that. So it is kind of a catch 22 in the sense that where does it start? So, and I heard this expression a long time ago, if you don't position yourself with your brand, your customer or your customers or your competitors will.
That's so true. It's right. So true. You know, when I think of other brands that really get it right, I'll give you another example of great branding for a company that I don't particularly care for. And that's Robinhood. What Robinhood did in the investing space is absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, almost every investing platform is better than Robinhood. It just is. Robinhood is very lean in the feature set. There's really not that much to it. They're continuing to evolve it over time. I don't particularly care for the ownership, so on and so forth, but it doesn't matter what I think. And it doesn't matter that their features are lean. They just did such a great job in making investing fun, catering their message to the retail investor, turning them into brand champions and advocates and building that tribe. And what the Robinhood name suggests to begin with, right? Like, This is for you, the little guy.
Yep.
And all the things they did there subliminally, subconsciously, when in reality, it's just an investing platform and it's not even that good, but it doesn't matter. I really think what they did there is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. The issue that I have with it, the platform in and of itself, and most of those scenarios is they're using the term investing, but they're not preaching investing. They're preaching buying and selling. Trading is not investing. Investing is what Warren Buffett does. You buy something, you hold it forever. Trading is like sports betting.
Totally agree. Oh, there's a million things we could pick on them about. I agree. Yeah.
But you're right. They did a great job of positioning themselves for the, you know, millennials and the
Gen Z,
younger generation to not be as intimidated as they would be, or take the, you know, to pull the curtain down from the big companies that are out there doing the same thing. But I use E-Trade and I use TD Ameritrade. But again, when I say I use them, I mean, I buy them, I buy my stuff and I just leave it there.
Right.
I very rarely are trading on a regular basis.
Same here.
Anyway.
So we're not the Robinhood target market, I guess.
Yeah. No, probably not. Speaking of E-Trade, you want to talk about loyalty. I got E-Trade in 1992 when they sent me six floppy disks, right? Those 3.5-inch floppy disks. And that's how I loaded it on what looked like a DOS screen back in the day. Mm-hmm. And the passwords that I have are still those passwords that are now backed up by an RSA key. So you have to put in the new 6-digit code every time. But when I call in for customer service, these people are like, holy crap, you've been with us for forever. I'm like, yeah, I know. Sure. One thing I didn't do was buy stock in E-Trade, which, you know, all right, live and learn.
So are you loyal to E-Trade because of the head, the heart, or the hand? Is it logical, emotional, or just force of habit?
It's probably force of habit in the sense that I don't use them to actively trade. I don't look at the brand every day. I don't think about it. To me, it's just a conduit. It's not, you know, the companies that I own within it are, you know, the brands that I own. So like I own Ferrari, right? So I'm a Ferrari fan. I love Ferrari. I don't have one, but I just love the brand. I love Formula One, and I've been following for Formula One and Ferrari for, you know, 25 years, 20 years. So, but I don't think about E-Trade in the context of a brand, but I guess I should be, because they do have many competitors. But I don't know. I just don't think of that space. I think of it more on the, you know, brands I do business with on a daily basis. American Express, I'm loyal to the end just because of a whole bunch of stories. And this is what I was saying at the beginning of the show. You know, we usually talk in the form of stories, and I'm not going to bore my listeners with the same story about why I'm loyal to American Express, but it comes back to an emotional connection that I have because of something that happened with the brand that made me say, these guys have my back, you know? Anyway, listen, we could talk about this forever. And I know you and I are going to take the conversation offline because I think I might be able to use Tag services for do my other businesses. But as we start to wrap up, I want to ask you, what does the future of loyalty, customer loyalty, look like to you,
John? Well, so I think the future projects to be much like the present in the sense that, kind of like we've been discussing on today's podcast, the core thing to me is emotional connection. That's how you get the most loyalty. And I don't think that's ever going to change. However, the tactics behind building those emotional connections or the vehicles by which we use to get our message out are changing all the time.
Yeah.
The most obvious example is social media, where we really seem to be going through the significant shift in what platforms are garnering the most attention. TikTok, most notably, and what they're and you know the way they've gathered or stolen market share from Meta. So you know when it comes to you know, as much as we've been talking about branding, ironically, my marketing background is much more on the digital side of the equation, you know, the SEO, the digital ads, the conversion rate optimization, these types of things. And whenever we're consulting with a brand and talking about, you know, lead nurturing, which I think has some direct parallels to loyalty, right? Like when an opportunity falls in a brand's sales funnel, but they haven't closed it yet, they need to, air quotes, lead nurture. And you've got a few different ways to lead nurture. You've got email to follow up. That's what we're really talking about, is multiple touch points, follow up touch points. How do you keep in touch, accumulate those touch points to ultimately lead that opportunity through the funnel or buyer's journey to a point of conversion. That's classic marketing 101. Mm-hmm. So what are those touch points? You've got email, you've got social media, you've got SMS, and you've got, which one am I forgetting? One more, organic social, email, SMS, and one I'm forgetting, and it'll come to me in a second. But I think, you know, email will be email and SMS will be SMS as long as our mobile phones are still relevant. I think organic social is really where you have the opportunity to be the most creative and stand out and differentiate. And once again, apparently this is the theme of today's discussion. I'm not a big fan of organic social media. Like, I don't use it much. And I feel like a lot of brands, particularly smaller ones, waste a lot of money in organic social when they could be putting it into channels that are, kind of a bit of a contrarian viewpoint. They could be putting that money into channels that are more predictable, more forecastable, more guaranteed, more measurable, all of these things. However, make no mistake about it, Rob, organic social is one of, if not the primary mechanisms by which we develop the exact emotional connections that we've been leaning into and emphasizing throughout today. So the net, the takeaway there, I think this is specifically like small business marketing advice here, is I really like small businesses to focus on more predictable, more measurable channels when marketing budgets are lean. But once you have a little room to breathe, you've got a little room to play, that's where I love organic social and all that it can do for you in building those really serious emotional lifelong connections, really developing that brand advocacy as well as that community, that tribe that's going to help spread the message for you, while, as we were discussing, doing that lead nurturing and creating those multiple touch points for you. That is really the beauty and brilliance of organic social. And so it's a very long answer to your fairly specific question. I don't know what the future holds, but I can almost certainly guarantee it's going to be the way brands leverage social media to create this connection.
Yeah. Well, I have to be completely honest with you. When you said organic social, I thought you said organic search. And I was like, what?
You don't want to get me started on organic search, because that'll take another 3-hour podcast. Because that's my background, so I could talk about SEO more than anything else.
Well, I'll just say this: from back in the day in the casino business when we were marketing, and even though there wasn't Google Ads at the time, but search engine natural search results compared to paid ads, the conversion ratio and the lifetime value was 3-1. The LTV for a customer that found you on their own compared to clicked on a link that was obviously an ad was 3x. And that was huge.
Yeah. So, yep. And I often attribute that. So now shifting gears, put my SEO hat on for just a minute with the whatever remaining time we have left here. I think the key difference there is trust, actually.
Yep.
Because when I'm talking digital ads, and juxtaposing that against all the other marketing methods that are out there, PR, SEO, content marketing, whatever it is, you know, digital ads on paper look like the best marketing channel because, again, the amount of the cost per eyeball is super inexpensive. The ability to cast a really wide net and get in front of a lot of people very quickly, and time is of the essence. You know, you can't beat a digital ad. The measurability, forecastability, all these things are fantastic. And so you might say, well, John, where's the shortcoming? isn't that the ideal marketing methodology? And there's one massive shortcoming, and it's trust. Because you get no trust as an advertiser. You're just that. You're an advertiser. You're another guy. Yes. You threw money, and you get visibility. And so trust is worth its weight in gold. And that just gets this probably the perfect bow to put on our conversation, because the brand, your messaging, and the way you connect those connections, that's the trust you really need. And that has an exponential impact on your bottom line compared to just being an advertiser.
Yeah. The other thing too, while we wrap this up, is that you think about from an emotional standpoint, I think people have egos to think that, hey, I did the search, I found this place, right? I found this organic search result in Google. I'm more apt to think, all right, I'm right. I'm looking at this review. It's not forced down my throat. That's the difference.
I think it's a brilliant insight on your part, Rob. I really genuinely do. I think you're absolutely right. And I think our guy, Donald Miller, who I mentioned earlier, that was kind of the other pillar of his book. I think I quickly made reference to it and then moved on to something else. But one of the other key pillars to his book and that story brand methodology is that brands often want to set themselves up to be the hero. Brands say, we want to be the hero that solves your problems. And Donald Miller says, not so fast. If we're to use a Star Wars metaphor, you don't want your brand to be Luke Skywalker. You want your brand to be Yoda. And what does Yoda do? Yoda makes Luke Skywalker the hero. So your brand should be the Yoda that helps get people to the outcome they desire while they in some way do it on their own.
Yes.
They are the hero. Your brand is the enabler.
Perfect. All right. We're going to end it on that note. Well, John, listen, this is a fantastic conversation. I want to thank you for your time. If our listeners, got some value out of the show, we would definitely appreciate a 5-star review on your favorite podcast streaming service. To listen to this episode and any other episode, you can visit theloyaltyminute.com. Thanks and enjoy.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for your next edition of The Loyalty Minute.